Welcome everyone to episode 22 of The Bon Bon Show. Today is May 10th, 2026. And on this episode, we're going to listen to Kirk gush about his recent playthrough of Capcom's latest and greatest title, Pragmata. He can share all his love of the game with us and tell us why exactly we should also be playing Pragmata.
Hello, Aaron, and hello, listeners. This is Kirk. Welcome to episode 22 of The Bon Bon Show. Indeed, today I'm going to gush over Pragmata. It's an awesome new IP from Capcom that's available on PC, Xbox, PlayStation, even on the Nintendo Switch 2. So I've played through the game. Yeah. I've played through the game on PC, and I've enjoyed every minute of it. And in today's episode, I wanted to share my spoiler-free thoughts. So don't worry. My spoiler-free thoughts with Aaron and you, our beloved listeners.
Yay! I'm excited, and I'm also excited that there's no spoilers, because I will play this game at some point in the future.
I don't know when, years later.
I will get there. Yeah, I didn't realize it was on Switch 2 for some reason. That version eluded me. I thought it was just on PC, PlayStation, and Xbox. So that's cool for Switch 2 players.
Yep. I was surprised too, but apparently it runs really well, which, you know, means they'll be able to get more of these type of big budget AAA titles in the future over on Nintendo's consoles.
Exactly. Yes, that's awesome. I think before we dive into the game itself, just if some of our audience is like, what is a Pragmata? What is Pragmata? What does it mean? I guess, what would you compare Pragmata to in comparison to like other forms of media? So like either manga or anime or other television or movies that you might have experience with, just to kind of help shape the view of what Pragmata is as a game or as it is as an experience, just to help people kind of familiarize themselves and kind of compare it to something they might already be familiar with.
Nice. Good question. I feel like you were a journalist in another life, Aaron. I'm watching you. All right, so Pragmata has two main characters. Two main characters are Hugh Williams and Diana. So it's like a parent and child relationship. At least that's how it starts out in the game. And that parent and child dynamic is a huge part of why this game is so amazing and kind of like a pillar of the story overall. So examples in, I guess, popular culture or popular TV shows would be like The Mandalorian, and Grogu would be like a Star Wars example, where The Mandalorian happens upon Grogu and then becomes this parental figure protecting the young child, as he was called in the first season before we knew that his name was Grogu. Other examples for video games would be like God of War. The recent God of War games has like a parent-child dynamic going on as well. I haven't played God of War, or the next example I'm going to say, The Last of Us, also has a parent and child. Have you played Last of Us, by the way, Aaron?
I played Last of Us when I was living in Japan. I think it was came out on PS3? I remember going to, was it Gayo, and where I was living in, by Kita Hiroshima. I was like so excited. The next Naughty Dog game after Uncharted, I was like, this is going to be awesome. I plugged it in. I played it for like an hour or two and immediately was like, I am never going to play this game ever again in my life. Not because the quality was bad. It was just the tension and the stress that I was receiving got from the game. I was like, I can't, this is not for me. So I immediately stopped. I think it's probably a phenomenal game and deserves everything that it's received, but it's just not a game for me. But yeah,
I agree. I'm with you as well. I have it on PS4, and I played it, and there was like a scene where you go and this, like, I don't know, it's not a zombie, but a very weird creature like jumps out at you. I also turned it off, and I have not turned it back on. I held on to it Even though I sold many of my other games to say maybe one day I'll play it, but I don't know. I used to like scary stuff growing up, but now I just cannot do jump scares or any of that stuff. But anyway, we are digressing. We probably have to do a why don't we play, why we don't play or watch scary stuff anymore episode.
Anymore, that's for me for my entire life. I can't do it. I
Okay,
feel like I've
well, I
tried in
used to.
small little bite-sized pieces, and even then I'm like,
No, thank
just
you.
nightmares for years. So, but anyways, yes, that's a good topic for to discuss another day.
Yeah. Another example of a video game that I have actually played would be Sekiro. In that one, it would be starting off of like a master protect being protecting your master type of relationship that Sekiro had with Kido or Kiro, I think his name was. But then
Okay.
as the story project progressed, you kind of had a different kind of parent-child dynamic to their relationship. I'm gonna pull out some very old references as examples here for anime. I would even go as far to say the anime aficionados should check out an anime called Guardian of the Sacred Spirit. That is one of my favorite animes of all time. In that case, the adult is a woman and who is protecting kind of like a prince. But that was actually the first reference that I got from Pragmata once I got into it. So, Guardian
Oh,
of the
okay.
Sacred
That's
Spirit,
cool.
not very recent anime, but highly recommended. I think it's only one season, and there's a book as well. And I'm so much of a fan that I've watched the anime, and I actually bought the book a couple months ago to help with my Japanese study. So yeah.
Oh, look at you.
Yes, check it out. And the final reference would be another. I didn't read the manga, but I watched a couple of the like old movies. Like these movies are literally in black and white, so they can tell how old they are. But Lone Wolf and Cub, I think it's based off a manga, but I've only seen the movies. The Pragmata storyline and that parent-child relationship kind of reminds me of that Lone Wolf and Cub, which is like a samurai warrior protecting a young child, and it's set in Japan, and it's quite interesting. So yeah, those are some video games, TV shows, movies, and anime that have that parent and child dynamic that's going on in this video game.
Cool. Yeah, I think that's kind of sets up the setting for us in regards to what we can expect from the Pragmata. I guess the two main characters storyline. I'm sure there's probably some typical things that those two characters might go through from their, I guess, character arc that might show up in other types of medium when you were dealing with parent and child type relationships. So, for those of you that might not be familiar with Pragmata, hopefully you're familiar with one of those other episodes or those other forms of media that Kirk had mentioned. If not, definitely go check those out. Sounds like some very cool things to engage in with in regards to some games and some anime and some movies. So that's awesome. I think the last thing I wanted to talk about before we, I guess, jump into the game itself is I know there's maybe a little bit of history in regards to how the game developed over time and maybe how it goes against the current trends or not. I guess you will have a better perspective on this than I will, compared to the current triple A games industry releases as of late. So would you be able to talk about first the development history of Pragmata and then how it fits in or doesn't with the current AAA games industry?
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah, there is some kind of controversy happening. I think we've touched on it in previous episodes if you're just listening to this episode for the first time, but both of us are like long-time gamers and there are different things happening within the games industry and it's a bit frustrating to deal with some of them. One of the frustrations it's like it's now more about the money. There really isn't much creativity. The game, the cost of creating games are ballooning, which means the games have to make more money. Like back in the day, if your game sold 500,000 copies, that would be an amazing game. That would be quite profitable. But now, if your games are not selling 10, 20 million, it's not even breaking even, which I feel is ridiculous. But back to Pragmata. Pragmata is a new IP from Capcom, which is not a very common thing these days in the video game industry. Studios either want sequels, so there'd be like, I don't know, Call of Duty 25 or whatever they're at now, or live service games like Fortnite, Apex, etc., where they build a game once, they add little things to it, and you keep paying a subscription or buying stuff from a in-game shop over time, and that game within itself becomes massive if it is, successful. Otherwise, it's shut down within a couple months, and all the time and money that you've invested is now lost. But I digress. The first thing that made me really like Pragmata, and one of the reasons again why I'm a primarily a PC gamer now, is that there was a really nice demo available for Pragmata, and I felt that a demo makes people confident, more confident in your game if you're willing to give us a chance to play a little bit of it for free.
Oh,
So as
totally.
a PC gamer, yeah, it allows me to see if the game runs on my PC, kind of get a feel for it, and I will be 100% honest. I had no interest in Pragmata. After seeing the first trailer, I didn't think it was the type of game that was for me, but the demo was what really sold me on it. Like trying the demo, understanding the combat and the hacking and the relationship that I didn't quite understand yet between Hugh and Diana. That was what made me want to play this game when it came out. So that was another good thing. And yeah, it was announced a lot many years ago. I think it was 2020, and it wasn't very well received by the gaming community, but it was okay, I guess. And yeah, as I said, not many studios were taking risks with new IPs. Some of it is understandable, but yeah, that was like the background of like Pragmata. This trailer came out many years ago, then we heard nothing about it. It was a new IP, so people were like, do we get into it type of thing? And then the games industry, how things have changed in the last 10, 15 years. Would it be a good time to put out a new IP for Capcom? So stuff like that. But as I will continue to say further on in this episode, it's an amazing game and I highly recommend it. Yeah.
Yeah, I can't remember. Remember seeing the original trailer like a long, long time ago, and maybe you remember, maybe not. But was it supposed to be like a near launch title when PS5 came out? Like I thought it was supposed to be kind of like something that was supposed to be released near PS5 initial launch. But I could be totally out to lunch on that. Do you remember when that was really originally supposed to come out, or does that ring a bell with you,
Yeah.
or am I kind of just, does it sound like I'm making that up?
No. I feel like it was supposed to come out at least 3, 4 years ago. So I think it was announced in 2020 with the intention to release it in 2022, which would be still within the PS5 launch window a little bit. The graphics were very different. Not very different. The graphics were not as crisp and clear as it is now. And I've read some interviews with some of the developers of the game, and they were like the hair physics and some in RE engine stuff that they needed to tweak specifically for this game needed a lot of internal work. So that was one of the reasons for the delay. Like just the hair of one of the characters, Diana,
Oh, wow.
is very detailed and how it flows and stuff. Where you could definitely see in that early trailer that it wasn't where they wanted it to be. She looked a bit plasticky and almost like a doll. So if yeah, so they had a lot of stuff they needed to do in-house, and that was one of the reasons for the radio silence. And then of course, in this modern gaming field that we are, with so many big budget games from Star Wars, etc., being cancelled or delayed inevitably. Without any knowledge, people just, I guess, assume that hey, this randomly announced IP that Capcom announced was probably not gonna come out anymore. But then more information started coming, this demo and stuff like that, and everybody just, started to get a little bit more excited. I still feel like many people weren't sold. Like I was even with the demo, but once the game came out, it really deserves many of the accolades, and I do believe that it's in the running for a game of the year. It's not like a revolutionary, technically amazing type of game, but not all games need to be, you know what I mean? And I'll talk about why there are things in this game that I like so much in specifics later on.
Cool. Yeah, the only thing I haven't really read much about the game. I've, heard, like I read your blog post and your initial impressions of it. The only other thing that I heard about it was, sorry, people saying it was like Capcom from the golden age of like late 90s, early 2000s, when a lot of game studios were just making wild and wacky creative games because it was just the thing that they did back then, taking chances on mechanics and characters and settings and what have you, stylistic art designs and all of that sort of thing. And the comment being made was just that it felt like Capcom going back to their old roots and trying to build and make and create something like that again. And I think we've seen this before with Capcom. When we talked about this, was it last year or at least over a year ago with Kunitsugami, The Path of the Goddess? This feels like Capcom again doing something where they're reaching into their back pocket of, hey, let's kind of go back to our golden age when we just kind of let our devs come up with these wild ideas, or what seems like wild ideas, and let them run with it and take chances again in a day and an age where we don't see on the AAA game side as many chances being taken. So it's nice to hear that Capcom is yet again doing this. And they don't always do it. Like we know that they have their staples like Resident Evil and Street Fighter and, Monster Hunter and the main series and the stories games. But it's nice to see them still dedicating some resources and some of their finances towards their creative side that's, yeah, it might fail. It might not hit an audience. I mean, it's going to hit an audience regardless. It might not be the biggest one and whatever the returns are, whatever that is. As a player, you don't really care. You want a fun experience. You want a good story. You want, you have your checklist of things. And it's nice to see Capcom still retaining their roots of like why they're still here today and how they got here is because they did all those things in the past. So it's nice to hear and see that they're doing this yet again this year.
I agree. I wholeheartedly agree about the what you said about the game feeling from the early 2000s, in a sense, where it does have that Xbox 360, PlayStation 2/3 feel about it, where you know what I mean? Like you're learning about a world and these characters that are unfamiliar to you. It's a self-contained, no tie-ins, no crossover, no connection with other, IPs and games and stuff. It's just its own thing that it's being created from scratch that you as the player that will now partake in. I was trying to remember a couple games from the early 2000s that are like that, but I don't know, like Crash Bandicoot and just like some wacky interesting things that used to happen back then. But now, like once studios discovered live service games and DLC and stuff like that, it just you could just tell like these studios used to push out, I don't know, one at least two, three games per year, but at least one. But like even a studio like Rockstar, look at Grand Theft Auto. Yeah, that's what I was thinking about. Look at the Grand Theft Auto games where you had Grand Theft Auto 3, then Grand Theft Auto Vice City, then San Andreas, and there was just like regular Grand Theft Auto games, just an example coming out. But then, they discovered microtransactions and DLCs and stuff, and then they went from releasing one game every year or every 2 years to, you know what I mean? When was the last game from a big studio like Rockstar?
Yeah,
So
that's
that
fair.
just happened overall. Even the Final Fantasy games, let's use that as another example. There would be Final Fantasy 7, then 8, then 9, then 10. You know what I mean? Like all coming out within 5 years. That was unbelievable. Now that you think about it. You know what I mean?
That's
A new
true. That's
Final
very true.
Fantasy game every year. And all these Final Fantasy games were very different in terms of their art style and their, you know, some of their gameplay and stuff. But now they take 4, 5, 6 years to release a Final Fantasy game, and I feel like it's just overcooked and over everything. Everything is so complicated. But at the end of the day, back to Pragmata, it's a very simple game. It has its own gimmick, with like the hacking and the gunplay. At its core, it's still a third person shooter, I guess, or third person action game. But it does enough that is unique to it, that makes it stands out, that gives it its own flavor, and that is why Pragmata is so awesome and feels like those early 2000 type, what do you say, trial and error type games, and we're so grateful that this was actually a success.
That's awesome. Yeah, and kind of going off the, you had mentioned some of the mechanics to the audience. I guess without giving away too much of the
No
game
spoilers.
in regards to mechanics, because I'm sure some of those evolve as the game goes on, you unlock certain things. But can you, without giving away too many spoilers, can you talk about some of the game mechanics and like an overview of the story for our listener with
All right, sure. So quickly, let me. No spoilers, like the early story. Basically, Hugh Williams is sent from Earth to kind of investigate the moon, where there's like a huge research base. They've discovered this new material that can basically 3D print anything. And but the moon base has gone silent, and Hugh is part of a crew. I think he's the engineer in the group that is just, you know, you need to get there and fix whatever is wrong so that the base can start working again. Of course, after he arrives, things go crazy and he's injured and he's healed by this little girl in air quotes, or that's what he thought initially. And then he finds out that, hey, this is not a little girl, this is actually an android. And you know what I mean? In his mind, it's even though it's a android, it's still childlike and innocent and without, you know, not evil. So this android saved me, so it's I want to make sure that it's taken care of, and we're going to navigate the troublesome situation that we are in together. So he is like he's not a trained soldier, he's not military, he's not like a, you know, Superman type character that we've seen so much in video games. He's just a regular guy sent out on a job, and now stuff is happening. And he's trying to protect Diana, but Diana, one of her skills as an android is that she's able to hack they say, you know, the hostile robots on the moon base. And why she's able to hack these robots, her story and all of that is then explained in little bits as you progress through the story. So yeah, it's that's it. Yeah. What was the other part of your question?
I guess the mechanics of the game. I remember in the videos leading up to the demo, I remember had seen like you had mentioned her ability to hack the hostile robots, and my first impression was like, okay, so you got to shoot, but then also hack at the same time. And just in my head, I'm like, how is that going to feel from a gameplay perspective, having to try to manage both? Was kind of the most worrisome thing to me is like, is that going to get too overwhelming as a player? And then having played the demo, obviously I understand now, but what was your initial impression of the shooting and hacking piece? And then obviously you're growing to appreciate that mechanic to continue, like obviously play the demo and then go from playing the demo to, oh, I'm buying the game now. Was it part of the mechanics that drew you in, or was it the setting and the story and everything else that also got you from playing the demo to buying the game and then loving the game to the very end?
Yeah, it's a combination of the setting, the story, the gameplay mechanics, everything just blended together perfectly. The moon base, sci-fi, android, evil robot type setup might seem a little cliche, like all evil bases are built on the moon for some reason. So in a way, I was like, okay, it's one of those. But then you get into the demo and you get a better understanding of, or a little understanding of what is happening, but it makes you curious to want to know more. And that's important about stories. Even if it seemed initially that this would be a trivial type of story, there's an android, there's an evil AI, there are giant robots, something went wrong on the moon, people are dying, you've been sent to save. You know, that's like the core of most sci-fi stories, to be fair. You know what I mean? Whether it's Star Trek, Star Wars, everything is like, okay, something went wrong on planet X. You have to go and investigate. Oh no, something is happening, you know? But so it was cool. But then the gameplay mechanics with the shooting and the hacking, I wasn't quite sure how that would work. I didn't think it was unique enough. But now when I played it, to, you know, you're using two characters at once. Diana, who's doing the hacking, you are doing the shooting, but you can't shoot the robots because they have like very hard armor, and Diana hacks them to kind of open up their weak points so that you can then shoot them. It takes a little getting used to. I'm not going to be like, oh my God, I immediately got it because I'm a genius. No. It's like I heard some influencers describe it as like a left brain, right brain type of thing where you're shooting stuff up and things are going boom and you're like, yeah, let's go. But then on the other side of your brain, you're like, I need to concentrate and follow these steps and strategize and know when I'm gonna open up these robots, if I need to run away. So in the beginning, it takes a little getting used to, but I promise you, once you're like in the mid game, you've unlocked some new abilities, new weapons, and it kind of sinks. It kind of gets you into this flow state where you're like dodging bullets and hacking and switching out your weapons. It helps that the controls are quite simple. So even though you have multiple weapons, without spoiling much or anything, it's not like you can carry 500 weapons on you at every time. You know, there's just like specific weapons in specific slots, and you have to choose which weapons you put in each slot. So, for example, you have one weapon specializing in offense, one weapon specializing in defense, and one with like a technical spin on things. And you choose which weapons go in those slots, even though you have multiple weapons that fit into those slots. And of course, robots have pros and cons to how you fight them. Maybe this robot's weak spot is on its head, so you need something that can reach up there. Maybe this other robot protects or heals other robots. So, you know, there's just so many layers. So there's the shooting layer, there's the hacking layer, there's the different types of robots that you will fight and their varying weaknesses. There are epic, and I do mean epic, boss battles. And even though you're on a moon base and you think, okay, it's gonna be space stuff and research facilities and stuff, the game still finds a way to put you in different biomes and have you have different experiences, more so than just walking down metal corridors for 5, 10, 20 hours. So yeah,
Okay, that's awesome.
that's why it's so awesome. Yeah.
Was there, you beat the game once. Is there any reason to, I guess, continue playing the game after the credits roll, other than I just really like this game and let's just play the game and, do a different build or do something else without, I guess, again, giving too much away to anybody. I guess is there an end game or is there replayability for people looking for, I guess, to get, more value with their money when they purchase a game such as this?
I feel like they're this game is definitely worth its price. It's like the main story itself is not very long. And then that's another issue with air quotes modern games, in a sense, where you feel like the longer the game story is the more it is worth. And if it is not long, it means that, oh, I finished this game in 10 hours, that means it wasn't worth the full price. That's not the case in this game. It's a very short game, but in my mind, or at least for me personally, that's not a bad thing. It means that I can enjoy the fullness of the story without all the fillers and the padding and and you know, devs just kind of putting in things and twists and turns just to pad the playtime. So, to answer your question more directly, the game itself, the main story itself, is about 10 hours, 12 hours
Okay.
if you take it slow. But then there is an end game where there are things to unlock and collectibles to grab, and there's just like challenges to go through, and all of this is fun. And I will tell you, I think Aaron knows this about me as well, and I'll share with the listeners. I am not the type of gamer that likes to collect stuff. I don't want to collect 10 bushels or coins or whatever. I don't want to replay stuff. I just want to put it in the game, and I will naturally do it while I'm playing through. But if I need to collect some coin, why is it on top of a mountain outside of the main story that I'm going to have to spend 30 minutes to trek up to? I don't like that type of game design. But in this game, every single thing that you need to collect, every single thing upgrades, every single accessory that you need to collect or, you know, improve your character and your build is all within your path. It's just if you
Oh,
choose
okay.
to
Nice.
ignore stuff and just go through and all that stuff, you can still play the game fine and not worry. You don't have to grind, you don't have to go out of your way to search for anything. Everything is there. I feel like I collected like 70% of the stuff just naturally during my playthrough. And even after I rolled the credits, I was so happy and excited to go through the places that I've been to just kind of finish mopping up the other things. And I kid you not, in terms of unlocking 100% on the different maps, I did that. Trust me. Even in
Whoa.
Expedition 33, I have issues going back to collect the feet for those who played Expedition 33. But in this game, yeah, it's well, the story is short, but the gameplay, the meat of the matter, makes you want to play more. The characters are interesting. Your relationship with Diana, the enemies that you face. The one criticism, because of course I can't be like everything is perfect. I wish there was more variety in the enemies that you face.
Okay.
That was, you know, kind of like a criticism. But overall, I feel like for it's good to have, I guess, less enemies, but they have a purpose and they have a story, and you understand why you're fighting these types of mining robots on a moon base, that they are mining a particular element. You know what I mean? Versus you're just fighting variety of enemies just to pad the game, so to speak. Yeah, hopefully I answered your question correctly. So yeah, short story, lots to do after the game. The credits roll, lots of replayability, multiple difficulty levels. There's a difficulty that you can just go through for the story if you want. I played it on normal, and after you've beat the game on normal, there are additional difficulties as well.
Ooh, yeah, I can. I like that you said, and I can appreciate that there's not really a lot of grinding necessary in this game where you can just play it from beginning to end without having to be like, oh, I need to stay in this zone and hope RNG is on my favor so I can unlock this weapon or obtain this weapon or, you know, get to level 20 because I'm at level 10 and I'm struggling. So level 10, level 20 will unlock this thing for me. So I need to just grind this level constantly, especially for me now. I mean, maybe that would have been good for me a long time ago when I had all of the free time, but with the limited free time, I really appreciate games that respect people's time nowadays and
Exactly.
allow them to kind of
Respecting.
just go through the game without having to just grind needlessly because they wanted it to be that case. So I appreciate that this game is designed in such a similar way.
Yeah, grinding grinds my gears. Let's see what I did there. And or the other thing that upsets me with Elden Ring did a little bit of that, but it's okay to an extent where you're playing through the game and you've made certain decisions that locks you out of other parts. So you have to replay the entire game up to this point to then make another decision to see a part of the game that you're now locked out of. You know what I mean? I hate those two things, grinding and locking me out of content. And I would like to report that Pragmata has none of those things. Everything you need to get, you can get. And if you missed it, you've unlocked that part of the space station, so to speak. So when you feel like it, you can go back there at any time. If you want to go through and collect every single collectible and everything in the first go, you can also do that. If you also want to make a beeline for the end of the game, you can also do that. You won't be any less powered to the point where you're unable to do anything. Maybe you'll have a little bit of less health points or not do as much damage, but it's not a situation where this boss is a bottleneck and you have to grind and kill 3,000 slime to get over this, you know what I mean? Or hope that an enemy drops a particular weapon that you need for your build. I hate all of that, those types of gameplay elements. But I might be in the minority as you are, but yeah, I want to play my game. I don't want to be stressed out. I want it to respect my time, and Pragmata does that amazingly, and punctuated by the amazing story, game of the year material in my eyes.
Ooh, so this, when the end of the year comes and we talk about our favorite games of the year, be prepared, everyone, that Kirk's on his list. Pragmata is going to be somewheres, but will it be number one?
Definitely.
We shall find out soon enough-ish. I guess it's only May, but...
Yeah, it is only May.
We'll see where things come.
Yeah, I think I've got two games so far. Monster Hunter Stories 3 and Pragmata are definitely on my list, which I guess two games after 5 months is a good thing. Maybe towards the end of the year, I'll probably have around five games and we can make it interesting. Yeah.
It's going to get spicy. Well, sweet. Yes, thanks for sharing the details on Pragmata and giving us some context on what type of game it is, how the story developed and who the game it might be geared towards. Is there any kind of last thoughts or feelings you wanted to get out to the audience today before we wrap it up?
I think we covered everything. I feel like we have to support games like Pragmata. I feel like I saw, I guess, maybe an hour or two before starting this episode that it has sold 2 million copies, which is amazing. I know it's not the 10, 20, 30 that Call of Duty and some of these games sell, but like new IPs, new material coming into this vibrant video gaming industry is a good thing. You know what I mean? It's like if you're gonna buy a car, there's a car for you if you have a family, a car for you if you want to go really, really fast, a car for you if you're a farmer. You know, I feel like it's the same. And you know, without throwing too much shade, I feel like in recent times, everyone wants everything to be for everyone. And while I've, you know, respect all people and, you know, everyone's interests and stuff, I feel like, especially in entertainment, there is value to having genres and different types of things that will appeal to different people. And Pragmata is a good example of that, where maybe someone else would play it and be like, oh my God, this game is too short or too boring, or I want more boom booms and explosions. And that's fine. You can play something else. But the variety, the creative decisions, the risks that this game have taken used to be the norm in the video game industry. Yeah. So I feel like now that it has come along and just been so well received, and of course there have been criticisms of the game. There were some people talking about the relationship between Hugh and Diana is inappropriate, but I don't want to get into that. If you have played the game, you will know that that is definitely not the case. But yeah, I love Pragmata. I think I will definitely continue to support this IP. I'm actually going to probably get like a t-shirt with Diana and Hugh on the front. I'll probably air quote surprise you with one, Aaron, maybe.
You can go to the Capcom store and check stuff out. I'm sure there's lots of cool stuff there.
Yeah, I already bookmarked it on Google and I'm going to check it out. I don't think they have many Pragmata stuff. And if I'm being honest, I don't think they expected Pragmata to be this successful. So they're like, holy shit, we need to get Pragmata stuff in this Capcom stores. Because it's all Monster Hunter and Street Fighter and Resident Evil stuff. But yeah, I'm gonna check out the store. I think they have some t-shirts coming out soon that I'm gonna grab a couple of, and just yeah, I get it that it's not just about the sales of the video game now. It's art books, it's t-shirts, it's you know, different things, figures that
Yeah, that's
make
true.
these, that support these you know, multi-million dollar investments to make these video games. But Pragmata is wholesome, it's new, it's interesting, it's graphically amazing, it runs well on PC, let me say that, because I gave Monster Hunter a lot of hard time because it didn't run well. But Pragmata runs perfectly on my, what, 2 year old gaming rig, gaming laptop now. And yeah, awesome game, highly recommended. Please go out and buy it or rent it from your library as you do.
Library.
Yeah, amazing, amazing game. Worth every penny.
Awesome. Well, you heard it here, everyone. It's on Kirk's list to be his potential 2026 game of the year. So we got
Yeah,
a raving
boy.
review of Pragmata today. Thanks for sharing all your feelings and thoughts about it. And yeah, thanks for taking the time out of your day to listen to episode 22 of the Bon Bon Show. Thanks, everybody. And Kirk, take us out.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for listening. I wonder what we will have in episode 23 of the Bonbon Show. You're just gonna have to stick around and find out. The
Yes.
Bonbon Show is available everywhere you listen to your podcasts. We have a video version on YouTube. Please subscribe to the YouTube channel. We've got it on Amazon Music, Spotify, Apple, iTunes, like everywhere. You can also listen it directly from the website at bonbonshow.com. And if you have any questions, what was the email address, Aaron? I keep forgetting it. Hello
Hello
at
at bonbonshow.com.
send us a message at hello at bonbonshow, or send us a voicemail at voicemail.bonbonshow.com if you want your voice to be on the show. So thank you, everyone. Thank you for
Yosh.
listening. Until next time, bye bye.
Mata ne.